long time ago, when I first became an Adventist, I don't remember where or when, an Adventist brother or sister showed me how the many, many tekel yefarsin represents 2,520 years. And it's one of those things that, you know, that's interesting. What page is it? On page 66 of your notes. Colton notes. And so that was something I've had in my head for 20 years, but it never meant anything. It was interesting, but so what? You know, where does it apply? Because I didn't understand the 2520 from this chart. I just been taught the many, many tekel yefarsin adds up to 2520. And then when we came across the higher medicine articles, and suddenly the 2520 was, at first, for the first couple of years here recently, it was very interesting, but we weren't learning anything that seemed to be of significance. But then when it started coming together, how important these two time prophecies of 2520 are, then I remembered the many, many tekel yefarsin. And so then I had to go back and see how I could, if it was true, and in whether it was something that I could say publicly, if it was true. And the place I started was I got on the internet and I typed in many, many tekel yefarsin. That's all you have to do. And you're gonna have so many hits on that from a variety of people that aren't Seventh-day Adventists, and they've got a whole lot of crazy ideas about the 2,520-year prophecy that's connected to many, many tekel yefarsin. But you'll find reference after reference that these words were both coins that had monetary value to them, and they were weights. That's another thing that's kind of amazing to me. It was, if you looked at the weights associated with a many was 1,000 in their structure of weights, and a tekel, when it was a weight, was 20, and yefarsin or peris, it's in there both ways in Daniel 5, yefarsin peris means divided. And all of the people that analyze this are saying this division of yefarsin or peres is dividing this 1,000 in half. So in your book, Sister Jackie pointed out that I have in the book incorrectly, it's incorrectly expressed. And if you read the notation I have in there, it's probably, you have the potential of stumbling over it as she did. And so I want to be clear about this. What you will find is that this monetary system, this biblical monetary system, it's based on the Bible. We gave you a couple. You'll have in your notes Exodus 30, Numbers 3:47. You can get the biblical references that a shekel is 20 gerahs. I don't know why I put gerahs. And so this is the point of reference. And when you go into the website, you'll see that you'll see a real in-depth argument on the letter T and the letter S. They'll show you how when you change it from Hebrew to Babylonian language, it's common with a lot of words to change from an SH to a T. So the tekel is nothing more than a shekel in the Hebrew. And so a tekel or a shekel is 20 gerahs. And the monetary system is gerahs. It's based upon gerahs, just like our monetary system is based upon dollars. And the smallest division of a gerah is a many. A many can be, it takes 1,000 manys to make one gerah. Okay, so when you're saying a many, it's like in our system, a penny. But not 1,000. A penny, you know, takes 100 pennies to make a dollar. But with manys, it takes 1,000 manys to make one gerah. There you go, 1/1,000. So that isn't expressed correctly in the notes, all right? So you write it down any way you need to write it down. And the peris is basically, peris is saying divided, and this division is understood as divided, this figure 1,000, which comes to 2520. And what seemed legitimate for me, where I don't have a problem with using this as a third testimony to the 2,520 years. One of the reasons that I don't have a problem using this is that if you get on the website, you'll find some Adventists that deal with this. They identify the many, many tekel yufars in this 2520, just like everyone else does. But you can find just, you know, handfuls and handfuls of non-Adventists. Some of them, I think, are non-Christians that go into the languages and identify that this was coinage and measurements of weight back in that time period. And then they can't come up with a lot of predictions about what this 2520 is. You know, some of it's connected with Adolf Hitler. Some of it's connected with the foundation of the United Nations or the next war that's going to take place. They got a lot of weird ideas on how they apply the 2520-year time prophecy connected with this. But you're having people from outside Adventism that are confirming the math of it. So, I mean, that's a better testimony than if it was just Adventists that were saying it. The whole world has acknowledged this. So the Millerites, they didn't see this. What they seen and what they acknowledged is that in Daniel chapter 4, and you have this in your notes, we looked at it a little bit last night, that in Daniel chapter 4, seven times passed over Nebuchadnezzar. And if you look at Leviticus 26, which is the first reference in the Bible that the Millerites use, appears listed Leviticus 26 in those four verses. In Leviticus 26, the seven times, you find how many times? Four times. And then in the story of Nebuchadnezzar in Daniel chapter 4, when seven times we're going to pass over Nebuchadnezzar, how many times is that mentioned in Daniel chapter 4? Four times. And as you go through the blessings and cursings of Moses, and there's more than one. It's not just Leviticus 26. You know, Deuteronomy 28, 29, there's a few passages in the writings of Moses where he sets forth the blessings and cursings. And you should look at them all if you're going to gather all the characteristics. But one of the things that Moses says about the cursings more than once is that if God's people would break the covenant with God, that he would make the sky above them as brass, and the earth below them is iron. You take your concordance and look up iron and brass, and you'll see that that was one of the symbols of the curse, the indignation against Israel, is that the sky was going to be as iron and the earth is brass, or vice versa. I forget which is which. Sky is brass, earth is iron. And you'll see in your notes, Sister White defines iron and brass as affliction. Those are punishment. So when the Millerites come to Daniel chapter 4, and they're saying that the story of Nebuchadnezzar is a second testimony to the seven times punishment against Israel, the illustration in Nebuchadnezzar's story in chapter 4 is that he's a giant tree, right? But the tree was going to be cut down, and what was going to happen to the stump of the tree? It was going to have a couple bands put around him. What were the bands? Iron and brass. Iron and brass. So yeah, I mean, there's little prophetic arguments in both stories that the Millerites obviously understood. They're saying the prophecy set forth in Leviticus 26 four times, and that's enough upon the testimony of two or three is things established. But they also point to Nebuchadnezzar's story in chapter 4, and they didn't see Belshazzar's story in chapter 5 as a third testimony, and that's okay. Book of Daniel. And those references are in your notes. We went through them a little bit last night. So I don't know why. I have no one's given me any negative feedback on this presentation yet. And a lot of things that we present, we get a lot of negative feedback. Okay, it just happens. But this is new material. Give them time. We may get some negative feedback on the 2520. But even though that hasn't happened yet, I have my personal conviction that this is a subject where we're going to get a lot of negative feedback. And my reason for that is that I truly believe that the 46 years is connected to the two indignations, one ending in 1798 and one ending in 1844. There's a 46-year period where the Lord is raising up his spiritual temple between 1798 and 1844, just as he raised up the literal temple at the very beginning of the 2300-day prophecy. He raises up the spiritual temple at the very end, and it took 46 years both places. But in the middle of that history, you have the argument that the Jews use against Christ, that he's going to raise up the temple in 3 days. And it's there in that history where it is stated it was 46 years. So I think you have a prophetic argument to think that this will be an excuse that is used to really come against the end time prophetic message. So it's good if you're going to consider this and you come to accept it as a genuine part of the Daniel's testimony, that you see it for what it is. Let's go over just a couple things before we get out of this. Go back to Daniel 9 and verse 11. Daniel 9:11. This is Daniel's prayer. And where does Daniel's prayer come at in terms of the flow of the book of Daniel? In the story of the book of Daniel. It comes between chapters 8, where you get the prophecy of the 2300 years and the interpretation of the 2300 years at the end of Daniel chapter 9. In between the 2300 year prophecy and then Gabriel explaining the 2300 years, you have Daniel's classic prayer. And in verse 11, in the middle of this prayer, it says, "Yea, all Israel has transgressed thy law, even by departing, that they might not obey thy voice. Therefore the curse is poured upon us, and the oath that is written in the law of Moses, the servant of God, because we've sinned against him." And then verse 13, it says, "And it is written in the law of Moses, all this evil has come upon us." And the point is this: Daniel's prayer specifically identifies the curse of Moses. And the curse of Moses is this indignation that is brought against Israel for breaking the covenant. And the indignation, according to Leviticus 26, was going to last for 2,520 years. So when you're talking about this time prophecy, if you're going to be clear on it, you need to understand this is a subject of Daniel's prayer. I don't know that he understood the 2,520 year time component of it, but he definitely was praying in relationship to understanding that Israel was under the indignation of God at that time. So for what we're saying about the 2520 is consistent with the story of the book of Daniel. And the story of the book of Daniel is what the pioneers have illustrated on this chart. The punchline, the foundations of Adventism is built upon the pioneer understanding of the important truths in the book of Daniel concerning paganism and papalism, because pagan Rome's relationship to the papacy is the history that prefigures the relationship between the United States and the papacy at the end of the world. And we're here once again. The United States is doing the work of placing the papacy back on the throne of the earth. And the only way you're going to understand that correctly is in the Bible. And the place in the Bible where it's laid out is in Daniel and Revelation, because those are the two books that emphasize the relationship between pagan Rome and papal Rome. And in doing that, Jesus is portraying the end of Rome, papal Rome, with the beginning of papal Rome. And this is the foundational understanding of the pioneers. And the 2520 is there. So when you start seeing that this is part of the story, even though, as Seventh-day Adventists, this isn't something that we get taught when we come into the church and go through the 27 fundamental beliefs and then we get baptized. This isn't one of those truths. Nevertheless, it's directly connected to the book of Daniel, and it was something that the pioneers were understanding, even though they didn't understand it all the way. So if you look at Matthew 24:15, "When ye therefore shall see the abomination of desolation spoken of by Daniel the prophet stand in the holy place, whoso readeth, let him understand." This is Christ speaking. He doesn't just simply point to the book of Daniel and say that we need to understand the book of Daniel. He says that we need to understand the abomination of desolation in the book of Daniel. All right? And if you go back now to the book of Daniel, And I'm fully aware that we've looked at this once already this week. But in Daniel 9:26, and I submit to you that when Gabriel comes to Daniel in verse 23, and he says, "Now I've now come to give you," at the beginning of the supplications, this is verse 23, "At the beginning of thy supplications, the commandment came forth, and I'm come to show thee, for thou art greatly beloved. Therefore, understand the matter and consider the vision." When Gabriel comes at this point, and he's going to explain this history that is the components of the 2300-year prophecy, if there's any history that Seventh-day Adventists should understand, it's the next few verses, because this is the history of the 2300-year prophecy, which is the foundation of Adventism. This is something that we should be familiar with, all right? Correct? There's a logic to that. So one of the things that I don't think we get gets emphasized to us very much is that verse 26 and 27 should be considered as one thought, okay? Verse 26 and 27 should be considered together, and we're going to look at it that way for a moment. In verse 26, it says, after 62 weeks shall Messiah be cut off, but not for himself. And the people of the prince that shall come shall destroy the city and the sanctuary, and the end thereof shall be with a flood. And unto the end of the war, desolations are determined. Now, in that verse, there's basically two things that are spoken about. The work of Christ when he's here, and then the desolating power that's going to destroy the sanctuary. So you can break the verse down into first part of the verse dealing with the work of Christ when he comes. And then the desolating powers. Now, we've looked at this earlier, but I want to go a little bit different direction. If you go back, hold your finger there, but go to Daniel 8. In Daniel 8, verse 22, it says, in the latter, now that being broken, whereas four stood up for it, four kingdoms shall stand up out of the nation, but not in his power. Who is being addressed here? I'm in verse 22 of Daniel 8. Verse 22 says, "Now that being broken, whereas four stood up for it, four kingdoms shall stand up out of the nation, but not in his power." Who's being described there? Greece. Okay, Greece. So we know we're at the end of Greece. It's already broken. The four horns are up. So verse 23 says this, "And in the latter time of their kingdom, when transgressors are come to a full." Now notice this next phrase, it says, at the end of Greece, it's going to introduce a new power. And what's the power that comes after Greece? Rome. Pagan Rome. It says, a king of fierce countenance. What's a king in Bible prophecy? It's a kingdom. Thou, O head, speaking to Nebuchadnezzar in chapter 2, thou, O Nebuchadnezzar, art the head of gold. A king is a kingdom. A king of fierce countenance and understanding dark sentences shall stand up. By the way, Sister Carol, when you say you work with the school in Hegelia, Romania, I know some people there. I don't remember their names, but there's a couple twin brothers that work there. Do you know them? Tall guy?
Yeah.
Really, really, really spiritual guys. Because I've been in Romania a few times. Okay. I've only went one of them, too. And when I'm in Romania, the only words I know is Pace Domnului. You know what Pace Domnului means? God bless you. That's what you say when you're shaking people's hands that they're leaving the church. But when you're in Romania and that's all you know, and everyone's standing around and talking, and the Romanians like to talk. Do you know what it is when you don't understand it? It's dark sentences. And that's what this verse is talking about. This nation here in verse 23 is going to be a kingdom of fierce countenance, but it's going to speak a language that's different than the Hebrew tongue. But it's going to understand its own language. But it's a different language. This is specifically identifying that this kingdom is going to have a different, not dialect, there's a word for a different, basic different language, totally. And the Italian language is totally different. Latin is totally different.
Linguistic?
Yeah, it's totally different structure. And he'll stand up. So turn with me, keep your finger there, and turn to Deuteronomy 28. In Deuteronomy 28, and is one of the places where you find Moses' cursings and blessings that Daniel's referring to. It's one of the passages, 28, 29. And in verse 48, Moses is already in the narrative where he's talking about the curses against Israel should they break the covenant. And look at verse 1 of 28 so you really get this in your head. Verse 1 says, "And it shall come to pass, if thou shalt hearken diligently unto the voice of the Lord thy God, to observe and do all his commandments, which I command thee this day, that the Lord thy God will set thee on high above all the nations." And Moses then just lays out the blessings that are going to be poured upon Israel if they're obedient. Okay, but there comes a point in verse 15 where it says, "But it shall come to pass, if thou wilt not hearken to the voice of the Lord," and here come the curses. And there's different places in the writings of Moses where he sets forth the blessings and the cursings. And the 2,520 years of indignations is one component of the cursing. But if you go to verse 48, it says, in the middle of the cursings, it says, "Therefore thou shalt serve thine enemies," which the Lord, this is verse 48 of Deuteronomy 28, "Therefore thou shalt thou serve thine enemies, which the Lord shall send against thee in hunger and in thirst and in nakedness and in want of all things, and he shall put a yoke of iron upon thy neck." Who's the iron kingdom? Rome. This is Moses being very specific that Rome's going to be the one that desolates you. And until he had destroyed thee. And what does destroyed mean? Desolated. It's another expression of desolation. Now notice verse 49. "The Lord shall bring a nation against thee from afar, from the end of the earth, as swift as the eagle flyeth." The eagle is one of the symbols of Rome. "A nation whose tongue thou shalt not understand." Then when Daniel 8 is identifying Rome, it says, understanding dark sentences. This king's going to understand dark sentences, going to speak a different language. Here, Moses is much plainer. But notice the next verse. "A nation of fierce countenance." And then it goes on. But it's very specific. In verse 23, it talks about the people in Jerusalem eating their own children during the siege. It's right there. Verse 53. It's part of the cursings pronounced against them if they disobey the covenant. So if you go back to Daniel 8... verse 23, it says, "In the latter time of the kingdom of Greece, in the latter time of their kingdom, when the transgressors are come to a full, a king of fierce countenance and understanding dark sentences shall stand up." This is Rome in fulfillment of the curse of Moses. And it goes on. There's more ways to show this, because in verse 25, this power is going to magnify himself in his heart, and by peace shall destroy many, and he shall stand up against the prince of princes. Pagan Rome stood up at Christ, both at his birth and his death. So this is pagan Rome, very specifically identified, but it's identified. The biblical identification that you can make that this is pagan Rome comes from the curse of Moses, which Daniel is praying about in Daniel 9. So when you come to verse 26 of Daniel 9, and it says, in the middle of the verse, it says, "And the people of the prince that shall come shall destroy the city." This is pagan Rome, and the city is Jerusalem, and the year is AD 70. This is a specific reference to the destruction of Jerusalem in AD 70. But it says, "And the end thereof shall be with a flood, and unto the end of the war." So when it says "the end thereof," and it says "unto the end of the war," what's it talking about? It's talking about the end of the war. It first talks about pagan Rome destroying the city and sanctuary in AD 70. It says, but there's a war continues on. And the war continues on with the flood. And we looked at it the other day in Revelation 12. First, you have pagan Rome there to crucify Christ. It's there when he's born. And then he is in verse 5 of Revelation 12. Christ ascends up to heaven, it says. And then verse 6. Talks about the 1,206 years of papal persecution. I'm talking about Revelation 12, verse 6. And in verse 14 of Revelation 12, it reiterates the 1,260 years of persecution. And in verse 17, it says that the serpent, during this 1,206 years of papal persecution, it was going to send forth a flood after the woman. That's what's being identified here in verse 26. Both pagan and papal Rome, two desolating powers, are identified here in verse 26. And the last phrase of this verse, it says, "And unto the end of the war, desolations are determined." Brothers and sisters, this word desolations in the plural is the key word that the pioneers use to say that there's two desolating powers in the book of Daniel, paganism and papalism. That word, desolations, in verse 26, is one of the main arguments that the pioneers used to uphold their understanding of the daily in the book of Daniel. They're saying this verse is talking about two desolating powers, and this verse has them. It has pagan Rome destroying the city in AD 70, and it has the 1,206 years of the papacy, of the flood of the papacy, based on Revelation 12:17. And then it says, until the end of the war, desolations, in the plural, two desolating powers, but to the end of what war? What war is it talking about? Well, this is Daniel 9. It's the war that's identified in Daniel's prayer. The war that's identified by Moses. The 2,520 years of indignation. It's talking about the trampling down of God's people. That's what this war is talking about. And verse 27 is following this thought. Notice verse 27. It's broken into A and B just like verse 26. It goes back and talks about the work of Christ. In verse 27 it says, and he shall confirm the covenant with many for 1 week. And in the midst of that week he shall cause the sacrifice and oblation to cease. And for the overspreading of abominations he shall make it desolate, even unto the consummation, and that determined shall be poured upon the desolate. He's going to make what desolate because of the abominations? The sanctuary in the city are going to be brought to an end because of the sins of Israel. If you put this into verse 26, if you overlay them together, it's the same story. And when it's talking in verse 26 about the end of the war, here in verse 27, it's talking about even until the consummation, it's talking about until the end of the war. This is a parallel thought, verse 27. And it's talking about the consummation, the end of the war. And then it says, and that determined shall be poured upon the desolate. So as we looked at the other night, let's look at it again so you get this in your mind, if you will. Go to Daniel 11, verse 36. And the king, and this is the papacy, brothers and sisters. This is the papacy. Most Bible commentators say this is the verse that Paul paraphrases in 2 Thessalonians when he's talking about the man of sin sitting in the temple of God showing himself that he is God. Verse 36 of Daniel 11 says, and the king shall do according to his will, and he shall exalt himself and magnify himself above every god, and shall speak marvelous things against the God of gods, and shall prosper till the indignation be accomplished. What's the indignation? It's the 2,520 years of God's indignation against his people. And this verse is saying that the papacy is going to prosper until the end of the indignation, till the indignation's accomplished. Now, it says, for that is determined shall be done. There's something at the end of that time period, whatever that is, it's been determined. And the word there that is emphasized is there's something determined in connection with the papacy. Verse 36 is talking about the papacy. There's something determined about the papacy that takes place at the end of the indignation. Right? You follow the logic? Okay, so if you got that logic, go back now to verse 27 of Daniel 9. And we'll start for in the middle where it says, and for the overspreading of abominations, this is verse 27 of Daniel 9, he shall make it desolate, even to the consummation of what? Of the war. What war? The war that both pagan Rome delivers when it destroys the sanctuary in the city, this is verse 26, and the war that continues with the flood, which according to Revelation 12:7 is the 1,206 years of papal rule. This is the war. And verse 27 says he will continue until the consummation of that war. And the consummation of that war was when? 1798. And then it says, and that determined shall be poured upon the desolate. And in verse 36 says that there's something determined for the papacy at the end of that war. And as we pointed out, the Hebrew of this phrase, if you have a marginal reference in your Bible, this last word in verse 27, if you have a marginal reference, it says desolator. It's saying at the end of the war, desolation is going to be poured upon the desolator. So, that's chapter 9, verse 27. So when you put verses 26 and 27 of Daniel 9 together in the context of Daniel's prayer. Daniel's prayer is saying, I've understood that we're under the curse of Moses. And one component of the curse of Moses is found in Leviticus 26, that if God's people broke the covenant, that he was going to punish them for 2,520 years. And in verse 26 of Daniel 9, it identifies that this war that takes place during the 2,520 years, it comes in two phases. It first comes from the power that tramples down the city and the sanctuary, that pagan Rome. And as Hiram Edson says, paganism began to trample down in 723. And verse 26 says, after the power that destroys the city and the sanctuary, the end of the war is carried out with a flood. And the consummation or the end of the war, according to the calculation which is correct by Hiram Edson, is 1798. So verse 27 and verse 36 is speaking about the papacy. And it says the papacy will prosper. Verse 36 of Daniel 11. Verse 36 says the papacy is going to prosper until the indignation be accomplished. Papacy is going to prosper until 1798. For that is determined will be done. That's verse 36 of Daniel 11. But what is it that's determined? You go back to verse 27 of Daniel 9, and it says what's been determined is that at the end of the war, desolation is going to be poured upon the desolator. And in 1798, the papacy received its deadly wound. So what I hope you see in here, and this is to me is an important point to see, is the end of this 2,520-year time prophecy is specifically and purposely pointed out in the book of Daniel. The conclusion, the event that is the fulfillment of this 2,520-year time prophecy is specifically identified in the book of Daniel. It's when the second desolating power, the papacy, when desolation is poured upon the desolator, when the papacy receives its deadly wound, and when does the papacy receive its deadly wound? At the end of the indignation. Do you follow me? So in this time prophecy of 2,520 years, verse 26 and 27 of Daniel 9 and verse 36 of Daniel 11 is emphasizing more than anything else the two desolating powers. The first, paganism. The second, papalism. During this time period, God's people are desolated, they're scattered, all right? But if you start where William Miller starts, and you come to 1844, you'll also see the end of this 2520 specifically pointed out in the book of Daniel. Look at Daniel 8:19. Gabriel comes to Daniel, and this is in Daniel 8. And what do we have in Daniel 8? We have the 2,300-year prophecy, and so Daniel's wanting to understand that. He's wanting to understand the history of the Medes and the Persians and the Greeks and the pagan Roman papal Rome, but he's also wanting to understand Daniel 8:14, unto 2,300 days and the sanctuary will be cleansed. And in verse 19, Gabriel comes to Daniel, and he said, behold, I will make thee know what shall be in the last end of the indignation. The 2,520-year prophecy in the Bible is called God's indignation. And in verse 19, Gabriel's saying, now I'm going to come to show you what takes place at the last end of the indignation, which means there's the first end of the indignation, which there's two indignations. There's the first one that ends in 1798, and there's the last one that ends in 1844. And in verse 19 of Daniel 8, the book of Daniel is specifically identifying the end of the 2,520-year time prophecy that began in 677. And in Daniel 9:26 and 27 and 11:36, Daniel is specifically identifying the end of this time prophecy. So it's not just a casual time prophecy. It's very purposely nailed down in the book of Daniel. We haven't recognized it, but it's there. Now let me show you something, if you will. Let me show you one more thing, and to see that this will be a hard one to convey. Maybe at the end of the night, at the end of the week, I realize that during the day, Kathy and I have been reading and, you know, basically taking it easy, and all of you have been going home and working all day long and then coming out all night long, and you have to be kind of brain dead compared to us. So this is sharing something. What I'm going to share here may be difficult at the end of the night, but turn with me, if you would, to Daniel 8:13. We're treading on sacred ground. We're going to look at Daniel 8:13 and 8:14, which is the foundation of Adventism, all right? And we're going to say something here about these verses that you probably haven't ever heard anyone say before, and it may sound like heresy the first time you hear it. But it's not. It's not. Verse 13 says, "Then I heard one saint speaking to another saint, and another saint said unto that certain saint which spake, How long shall be the vision concerning the daily and the transgression of desolation?" Brothers and sisters, the daily is paganism. Okay, let's forget the modern theological view, and let's just relate to this as the pioneers did. The pioneers said the daily here is paganism. So the question is how long is the vision? And this word vision is chalzon. It means the complete vision. How long is the complete vision concerning what? Concerning paganism, the daily, and the transgression of desolation. And the pioneers correctly identify the transgression of desolation as the papacy. So the question is, it's about duration. How long? It's not about when. It's not about a point in time. It's about duration. It says, how long is the vision concerning paganism and papalism? Then it goes on to say what paganism and papalism are going to do. They're going to give both the sanctuary and host to be trodden underfoot. So here's the question now. Let me summarize it down. How long, duration, is the vision concerning paganism and papalism, the two desolating powers that trample down God's people and God's city? So what's the answer? As Seventh-day Adventists, you should know the answer. We know the answer. The question's verse 13, the answer's verse 14, right? The answer is 1844, correct? No, it's not correct. That's what we've been teaching the world for 150 years. But brothers and sisters, the vision concerning the trampling down of God's people in the city of paganism and papalism, when did papalism finish trampling down God's people? Based on what verse? Look at Revelation 11, verse 2. This is the second desolating power, papalism. Revelation 11, verse 2 says, "But the court which is without the temple leave out, and measure it not, for it is given unto the Gentiles, and the holy city they shall tread underfoot for 42 months. What is this 42 months? According to Sister White, this is a 1,206 years of papal rule. The papacy tread down the holy city for 1,260 years. Paganism tread down the holy city. When did they do that? 70. First paganism, then papalism. So if you go back to verse 13 of Daniel 8, and it says, how long is the complete vision about paganism treading down the sanctuary and the host and papalism treading down the sanctuary of the host? When does that vision come to an end? 1798. And Seventh-day Adventists have been telling the world for 150 years that the answer is verse 14, 1844, and the reality of it is the math don't work. Do you see that? Does that kind of shake you? Do you see it? There's only one way to make it work, brothers and sisters. There's only one way to make it work. And you know how it works? It's because the question takes you to 1798 in black and white. And the answer is 1844. And the way that you can give 1844 as the correct answer is by understanding the 25-20. Because the 25-20 time prophecy is what ties these things together perfectly. That way you can give the intelligent argument about 1844. Because the end of the first indignation is 1798. That's the trampling down. And the end of the second indignation is 1844. And they can't be separated because they're part of the same work. And what is the work that takes place here? The raising up of the temple during this 46 years. It's the same conclusion in that regard. So Seventh-day Adventists have been correct about 1844, but they haven't really understood the nuts and bolts about the question and the answer because they haven't understood the 25-20. Do you follow the logic even though you haven't tested it yet? Yeah, but we haven't explained the snapshot well enough here to really get into a discussion about that. And I want the people here to kind of settle into this before we go that. But yeah, it does. But we can't go there. You have a question.
Is this why some of the theologians have turned against 1844,
say like this, or, and? I don't think so. I've looked at that. Once I realized for myself that there was discrepancy between the question in verse 13 and the answer in verse 14, I've thought it through, and the Lord has held His hand over that until we see the 25-20, because the 25-20 justifies us. We're right. It's 1844. That is the answer. But without the 25-20, you can't give a consistent argument to defend that. But of all the arguments against our understanding of 1844, none of the enemies of the truth have pointed out the inconsistency between the question and the answer. The Lord just prevented them from seeing it. And now that they can't use it anyway. Now we have the 25-20. Well, yeah, that's sealed up to our minds from the acceptance of traditions and customs that have been handed down from generations to generations. Yes. Ties them together. Brothers and sisters, that's the punchline that I'm trying to get at this point. It's this. William Miller didn't see all of the 25-20. And he was even wrong on the year zero, so he didn't even have the right concluding date. And then Hiram Edson comes along, and he sees the other half of the 25-20, but he doesn't see enough of it to say, hey, William Miller was right and I'm right too. He doesn't see the whole picture. And here we are at the end of the world, and suddenly we can see both of these lines of prophecy, and then you also see that these two lines of prophecy, they're not just interesting, they actually impact the very foundational message of Adventism in a way that is just profound. Right, and only thing I would change about what you're saying, I follow your logic, is I think I'd put trampling down here, because the trampling down is not just the daily, but it's paganism and papalism. It's and when Hiram Edson's, if you read Hiram Edson's, White's given her endorsement of the 1843 chart, the title of the chapter is The Gathering, and the first two-thirds of that paragraph is focusing on the scattering and the gathering. And when you understand what the scattering and gathering is, and she says the 1843 chart was directed by the hand of the Lord, the most significant thing on there, on that chart, that has any relation to the scattering and the gathering is the 2520 and the end 2300 days. But I mean, you can't separate the inspired connection. They're just there. Any other questions? Yeah. I have no idea, but I don't think so. But it will be. It will be. I mean, there.
The Times of the Gentiles articles, and he said he had, but it had been some time back. But if you would get those articles, you have them now in your possession if you have the syllabus.
I would
recommend that you read the Hiram Edson articles in content for themselves, and it will also show you something about our past, that amongst us as a people, Hiram Edson was a Bible giant. A Bible giant.
Yeah. And in that article, this seems much more minor than it used to. In that article, Hiram Edson identifies the glorious land of verse 41 of Daniel 11 as the United States of America, based upon Bible prophecy. And he was right. Any other questions? Yeah, yes.
Regarding Daniel 8:14, the 2300 days, that ends in 1844, right?
Absolutely.
Okay.
So what I'm saying is generally how we've taught it is that there's a question raised in verse 13, and then there's the divine answer given in verse 14. And the Seventh-day Adventists, we know the divine answer is October 22nd, 1844. But if you go in and you look very carefully at the question in verse 13, there's no way that you can logically, based on traditional Adventist understanding, argue for 1844.
Okay, in other words, you're saying verse 13 ends in 1798.
Absolutely.
Okay.
But with the two 2520s, you see that the Lord has tied both those dates together.
Right.